Welcome to the Bangers This Podcast. You're here with Julian, who has heaps to say but can't form a coherent sentence. Daniel, who has heaps of good stuff to say and doesn't speak. And me, who brings heaps of notes but is unable to read. Yeah. Welcome, boys.
Well, between the three of us, I think we can figure something out, eh?
Between the three of us, we've got like one brain.
I'm so glad the podcast has devolved into us like mostly talking shit and then talking about like real meta popular bands. This week, as we said last week, we're going to talk about Killswitch Engage and their new song, The Signal Fire. We'll jump into a sample right now and then we'll continue to talk shit.
Now, I know you were saying that I can't fucking speak today.
Did you and I just trade brains? I'll be the most articulate during this podcast.
Wasn't it the other week you were bragging about your vocabulary well?
Yeah, I forgot one word just completely.
Yeah, just like literally 3 seconds later, you couldn't fucking think of a word. Yeah, it was the best.
And then like last week, I was just trying to flex a little bit. I don't know if it worked. Anyway, it's your turn to fuck.
Well, look, I'll continue fucking up now. I know we talk a lot about the fact that we've tended to go down this path lately of talking about somewhat more popular bands. We've got to keep in mind that that's not necessarily going to be the case. I'm sure there are going to be people who haven't heard of Killswitch Engage before, and I think it's great to talk about them. And I think Killswitch is a band that's had such a big influence on the metalcore genre.
Because there's people alive today that weren't alive when they had like their first singer. Probably weren't alive and had their second singer listening to us.
This could be another history lesson.
There are people old enough to drink, like that were born after Alive or Just. No, Alive or Just Breathing was 2002, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or just. Almost old enough to drink. You get my point. Fuck it, it was a long time ago.
But look, The Signal Fire, hey? I think it came out of nowhere.
Just on that point, really quickly, sorry. To that end, I agree. I also think that for people, like, we're not old. But like people like in our age bracket that have been with these bands for a lot, like most of their career, if not all of them, there was sort of a period I feel where there was a bit of a dip, and a lot of the bands we liked we weren't really sort of into anymore, or they were just doing other things, or they just weren't doing anything. And now these bands are coming back and just really still pumping out good music. So I think we want to try and focus on the smaller stuff, but. You know, when they put out shit like this, you can't really, it's up to date and it's new, so you can't really say no to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's more like reminding people that they exist and they still can, like you said, put out a good track.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they've proven that with The Signal Fire. It's really, really comes on strong with the bang, doesn't it? It's on the bangers list.
Yeah, fuck you. Like from the basically from the start, this song kicks about as hard as last week's song did. Killswitch Engage have always been quite heavy, and this song is right up there with some of the heaviest stuff. I think there's a scream, a big, loud, angry scream straight away, straight into like the fast guitar and the fast drums. It's all very much on point for the genre, which is...
Oh, fuck, I don't know.
It's hard. I was just going to say it's basically metal with touches of... bit like there's metalcore in there because, there's clean verses, but in reality this song is probably just a metal, heavy metal song.
Well, I like to think that when you say like this is a metalcore song, but it's Killswitch Engage, people say... Oh, and the lights, the switch flicks.
Yeah, so that's the torch.
They don't think like new metalcore. They just think what Killswitch is for metalcore and what they were when they started.
Actually, I'm glad you said new metal just then. I kind of define new metal as there's a bit of spoken word in it and like weird new sounds. But in this song, I think the lead singer does a bit of speaking.
Do you reckon?
Oh, like yelling? Not he's not singing, he's not doing unclean vocals, he's just
I see what
yelling,
you're saying, yeah.
Talking, yelling, kind of. Yeah.
Whereabouts?
Towards the end.
As usual, I did.
Yeah, the bridge, in the bridge, I know what you mean.
In the bridge,
yeah. I think that's something that Jesse actually resorts to quite a bit.
Yeah, so let's go through the band members real quick. Jesse Leach is the main lead singer of Killswitch Engage.
And the original.
And the original, he was there from the start.
Yeah.
He left in about 2000 or so for personal reasons, as it were.
It was after Alive or Just Breathing.
So, yeah.
The most successful, that was Howard's first one, wasn't
That's
it?
Right, yeah. So in about 2003, Howard came on board.
I think 2002, anyway, a long time ago now, about then, Howard Jones was a vocalist for a while, and he's kind of, this is a very personal opinion, I think he is the sound and face that is most memorable about Killswitch Engage, right?
Well, he was there during their golden era.
He was, when they really blew up and had a big fucking.
And I don't think it's a coincidence either. Like, no, I think they'd built a solid foundation with Jesse.
Yeah.
And that lineup. But after, and Alive or Just Breathing was like their breakthrough. But then they bring on Howard. And it's just bam, at another level.
And speaking about those two, we'll talk about one more important character in the story, which is Adam D, who is, I guess, there.
Adam D? Are we allowed to talk about him in this episode?
We will. We'll touch on him briefly. He likes to get touched on briefly.
There's always no talk about Adam D.
Yeah.
Well,
do you want to crack that window open? I'm sweating like a fucking pedophile at High Five concert. So we'll talk this episode about Adam D and Jesse Leach and Howard Jones. But this song has all three of them. So they've got the old singer, the current singer, who's an old singer, because Jesse Leach has come back, blah, blah, blah. Beside the point. Anyway, they both come into the song. They both do some screaming and some cleans. It's fucking very good, very high quality. They both sound really – they both sound the same.
Yeah.
Like, Jesse's come a long way vocally from at the start.
Yeah.
Where he was
he couldn't do cleans at all.
He couldn't. He was like 22 years old when they first started making music, I'm pretty sure. A lot of strain in his voice you could hear is kind of – raw, I guess, but also like strained, raspy, didn't have the knowledge to of what he was doing, really. He was a bit wet behind the ears at that stage. He's come so far now that he's comparable to Howard in his singing, you know, in his skill and how powerful his voice is, because Howard Jones is a fucking powerful, powerful singer. One of the biggest baritone.
Yeah.
And he can go really high as well. It's so high and so powerful. They're great. So the two of them coming together and sounding so good. Amazing. You've got to check this song out. Anyway, I'll stop rattling shit. Someone else tell me what they reckon.
Look, before I butt in, Julian, you said you've listened to this, 15 to 20 times today?
I listened to about, because I'm fucking stupid. In my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, we're doing the podcast on Friday, and I didn't know the song. I was like, yeah, it's cool. And then it goes to Friday, I'm like, oh, that thing that I've been meaning to do all week, which is check out this mad song, I haven't done. So I got to work this morning, went, well, I'm not working today. Turns out I had a shitload of work to do, but hey, I just chucked it on the headphones because I usually listen to music while I work. And one thing I noticed was this song only goes for 3 minutes, right?
Short and sweet.
I didn't notice that straight away. And then after the third spin, I looked at it and went, oh, it only goes for 3 minutes because I couldn't stop listening to it. Like, I was just hooked on it. So it's got, straight off the bat, huge replayability. But I think because, you know, it's structurally, it's like sort of intro, verse, chorus, guitar solo, chorus, end. So it's almost like a pop song, but because it's just balls to the wall for 3 minutes, you just get really sucked into it and you really enjoy it. And then in the end, you're like, oh, fuck yeah, I want more of that.
Yeah.
That was, I probably listened to it 15 or 20 times today.
And in saying that, I went into it with very low expectations. I was like, oh, you know, it doesn't matter. I've moved on from Killswitch now. This song won't be too good. And listened to it and I was pleasantly surprised. So
hopefully I felt like, I've never really been a huge fan of them, but just as far as the reaction from people and the quality of the music was, I felt like you did. About this song, I felt the same way you did with Reverence by Parkway. It was, I don't know heaps about these guys, but fuck yeah, they've definitely still got it. You know what I mean? Because I gauge what other people would tell me about their other stuff and, like, you know, I've heard a fair bit of the end of Heartache and that was just like top tier music. Yeah. And I listened to this and a couple of others off the record and I'm like, yeah. This is still top tier. These guys have still definitely got it.
They're so consistent with their delivery, I've found. And there might be a few occasional songs on their albums that maybe don't quite hit that level, but yeah, like generally
no, you're exactly right. Yeah, they have some on their older albums. There was like always a few songs that would stand out and a couple that kind of felt like filler.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of
But that's the funny thing too, because it's so subjective that what you think is like the best song on a record, I might go, oh, that's filler.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And you're like, oh, no, it's sick for this reason. I'm like, yeah, but this song over here is sick for the better reasons.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's massively subjective.
Yeah.
You know, like those of us.
Yeah, it's like me saying I think Howard was the best sound for Killswitch Engage when in reality Jesse sounds just as good.
I was actually at my buddy's house the other day and he had they got a live DVD, that they put out recently, I think. Oh, no, it was just a live set, maybe. So it was like a pro shot live set.
Was it recently?
Yeah, well, it had Jesse in it.
Well, there was one from like 2012 when he just rejoined.
Maybe. Look, I don't know exactly what it was. He's wearing like this fucking hectic black cutoff shirt. But they just sounded really good. Like, you know, they're musically, they were tight. They were, sounded like just a unit, basically. They were synergy. So, and he sounded fucking unreal. And you just, it's like Parkway. You just like watching them.
Yeah.
Because they're having so much fun. So you want to have fun.
Yeah, especially Adam D's having a good time.
I think he was wearing like a flag around his neck as a cape and just a pair of stubbies.
Adam D is the best on stage character I've ever seen. He's up there with Angus Young in terms of stage presence, you know?
Yeah.
And
what does he say? He always has something funny to say on stage, and it's always like off the cuff.
Something about having a small dick or something.
He'll say like the most random shit, and it's hilarious.
He's going to buy you all. He always talks about pizza and beer. I'm pretty sure.
Just stuff that you would not expect, like metalcore bands used to be like, oh, we're tough. And then asking Alexander, you're like, no, he's straightening our hair. So now it's just like, whatever. No one gives a shit. So.
Adam D's up there with his friggin' like Adidas shoes and just like running around like a madman, fucking doing like little.
He's like if you
high leg crossed, kicks and shit.
Yeah, it's like if you cross this, like a really good comedian with Wes Borland.
Yeah,
like Carl Barron and Wes Borland had a love child, and that's Adam.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so, I like it. Yeah. Like Adam, he's one of the reasons why like I love to. I've seen Killswitch Engage live 3 times now, I believe. And haven't let me down. And Adam good. D is like, even though Jesse's just, I've never got to see them with Howard, unfortunately, but even though Jesse's the frontman, Adam D's like he's the source, you know, he's the one that has all that presence on stage and he's the one that kind of keeps the show going.
Yeah. So. And I reckon he's got a very, it's pretty defined kind of sound that he's developed himself. He says the tones that he uses, he tries to change over time. But I think when you listen to one of those songs, you can hear the guitar that he's playing is very like, it sounds almost the same, but it's obviously different. He's doing different riffs and different ideas, but you can tell it's him. And in a lot of the songs, correct me if I'm wrong, he does a lot of downstroking on his guitar.
Yeah.
And all the time, a lot of the songs, they'll just be like opens down and down and down and down.
Yeah, that's right.
And instead of, you can go up and down. You can alternate pick up and down to make things go faster, but instead of doing that to get his, I think it's part of his sound, he just goes down, 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 down picks. And I know that sounds ridiculous that you can hear that, but for me, I can hear that he's just downstroking really, really fast instead of going up, down, up, down, up, down for the different effect.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting when you sort of break that down. And for people who don't play guitar, look, it might be hard to tell the difference. They might just think, oh, that sounds cool. But for someone like yourself and me who've played guitar and experimented with metal riffs over the course of many years now, it's obvious what kind of difference that kind of make that sort of approach can make. And biggest example would be where this sort of began with would probably be Metallica with a lot of the riffs that James Hetfield's written over the years. So he's a very, very reliant on downstrokes and bring that chug to it.
It sort of makes sense by the name, but just for people that don't know specifically what it is, down picking is just you pick directly down. You don't bring the plectrum
that's
back
right.
up.
Yeah.
And strike the string on the way back up. It's just that's straight right. vertically down picking.
It's not very economical, as they say.
No, it's not.
You've got to reset your wrist and then strike it again.
And
then
and it's quite physically demanding, and it takes a lot of practice to be able to get it to the level that someone like Adam D could play it at. But it's a integral part of his sound. Like you said, it makes him very recognizable. Yeah,
it's a small thing.
Yeah. And I think that's it. Like whilst he has tampered with his tones over time, you can still kind of tell it's an Adam D tone. But I think for me personally, that's more kind of springs to mind when how do I put this? It's more to do with his technique, I think, and his style of playing.
Yeah, he holds the guitar up very high.
Mm-hmm.
And that, when you hold it up high like that, what it does, it gives you access to the fretboard without straining your wrist.
I fucking, I play like him too. Like maybe not too.
Not as high. He's like a Beatles.
Yeah.
You know how high the Beatles would have their guitar sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he plays like
Harrison, the big fat bottom one, but he'd still have it up here.
Exactly. Yeah. And it also, with taking pressure off your wrist, you can. I personally think you can move a little bit more up and down faster.
Yeah.
You can get up and down the neck more. It's more comfortable, especially when you're playing down towards the headstock.
yeah,
less straining. He can also see the guitar in a different kind of way. So it's maybe it's just his own personal thing. I noticed he does wear glasses, and so maybe he has it so close so he can actually see.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
maybe, yeah.
Because it's kind of a thing that it's sort of like a cool status thing to have your guitar as low as you possible.
Yeah.
Like, but going back, it was. Yeah.
The lower, yeah. The cooler.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Oh, look, yeah. And that's funny, like the band that that I play in, like I'll play not quite to Adam D's level, like I said, but I played up higher than your average Joe. And the other, the rhythm guitarist in my band, Robbie, he loves his Metallica, and he'll want to do it, the fucking Hetfield, and have it down at his fucking, at his schlong, you know, or in the lower
schlong, like, down his ankle,
yeah, it's down his knees. And I'm there going, I'm there just thinking, I'm just looking at, I've tried it as well, I just can't, like, I just can't get the reach, you know, and I just don't feel comfortable. And I think as a performer on stage, you need to be comfortable. You need to be up there in a position. You don't want to be worrying about straining your wrists and fingers. Like, you want to be in a position where you can play freely. Like, that's super absolutely important. And you probably agree as a drummer too, right? You don't want to be cramped up.
There's a very standard like metalcore kit look that I used to love, but I would have a similar like setup to it, but there was just certain things. I needed to have my cymbals in sort of slightly different positions, and I needed to have like a slightly forwards tilt on my snare,
yep,
as well, which like most drummers will have a flat.
So drummers are very pedantic and
particular
about their things.
But like a lot of metal drummers will have their snare tilt, like Chris Adler, you know what I mean? Like he's from Lamb of God, sorry. His snare drum is like at a 30 degree tilt facing him.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's actually roughly the same tilt as his toms. You know what I mean? So
it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because, so, you know, things just kind of flow a bit more.
You
get to a point
where you stop caring about image and you care about access. You know, so I would always have a slight forward tilt on my snare. So I would always do like what's called rim shots. And that's when you hit the snare, you strike the rim of the drum with the body of the stick and the head on the skin at the same time.
Yeah.
So it makes a real crack, like a gunshot sound. And you could always, when I was playing live, you could always tell, like if I was really getting aggressive with it, I'd fucking belt the shit out of it. And it just, even like quarter notes or like half notes, it is just really big crack sound.
Yeah.
So just little things like that. On the topic of being able to definitively say, this is Adam D, I was actually went to the gym with our sound guy, Colin, who can't be here at the moment because he's teaching a cello lesson tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So
he's a busy man, Colin,
isn't
he?
He's elusive. Yeah. He's hard to track down. We went to the gym earlier and I said, hey, I'm going to do the podcast with the boys. And he goes, you're going to talk about 7/8 again, you fucking losers. No, I put it on. He's like, this is fucking sick. He goes, what did he say? He goes, it sounds kind of, it wasn't Trivium. What's that other band? He said it sounds, kind of Trivium, that opening riff, and then it changes a bit. He goes, yep, that's Adam D, straight away.
Yeah.
He goes, yep, he doesn't listen to metalcore that much, but he goes, 100%, that's a kill switch riff.
And I think what that is Adam D, what I wanted to touch on with his style of playing is that, kill switch is considered one of the, I guess, the pioneers of metalcore, I suppose. But and what I feel a lot of bands, especially this day and age, tend to lack, that what Adam D possesses with his songwriting and the riffs he creates, it's a lot of groove when he's he has some really, really catchy riffs and some rhythms that are quite unique. And it's sort of a blend of like really kind of heavy, like modern heavy music with thinking back to more to like a groovy,
are they
Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin kind of grooves, right?
Yeah, you could even go back as far as Deep Purple. They have some groovy riffs in there. And I'm not speaking about Smoke on the Water. They have some other groovy riffs.
Black Knight, man.
Yep. Oh, and they use blues scales though, right? I wonder if Adam D is using blues scales.
He does. My Curse is a
blues great scale. Example.
They got a little touch of
I was going to actually say,
For those who don't know My Curse, it was from As Daylight Dies, which I think was 2006. Howard's second album and my personal favorite from Killswitch. Look, that's something that's really stood out for me. And I think it's been a key factor in Killswitch's long-term success at the riffs that Adam D can constantly put out.
Yeah, it's because, they can write sick riffs, but also, like, they've got monster breakdowns. But that only gets you so far, you know what I mean? So he's got that very
– yeah.
I definitely think sort of heading back towards the structure of this song – I am not a huge Killswitch fan, but they're much like I grew up listening to the Beatles, right? Like I fucking, always listening to the Beatles with my dad. And then there was sort of the greats like Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, bands like that. Don't listen to them, but you got to respect them.
Yeah.
Killswitch for me is very much a band like that. I wasn't massive on all their stuff because it wasn't super heavy, but the point I'm leading into is their drummer, I think, definitely deserves kudos, or at least the rest of the band too, because on the stuff of his I heard, by the time I got around to listening to them, I was into more the heavier kind of metalcore. And a lot of the time, the stuff I've heard from him is definitely that metalcore, but he's like, fuck it, I'm going to play on the hats. Like, I'm not, I don't have to be belting the crash cymbals all the time.
Yeah.
But he's got this very human kind of style.
Yeah.
From what I've seen, yeah, just in my experience. So,
no, I wouldn't know at all.
in the verse, he gets that real simple sort of like beat on the hats.
Yeah.
But in the chorus, he uses the hats too. He's like, this is what I am as a drummer, and I'm going to do this, and it works for the band.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So he's like very.
Has he been the same guy?
No, it started off as, believe it or not, Adam D was the original drummer for Killswitch for the first album, I believe. Maybe an EP. No, it was the first album, I think. And then I can't remember the second guy came on for Alive or Just Breathing, I believe. Mm. I don't know if it's for the writing or just the touring.
Have I got that right? The guy that did The End of Heartache, is he still with them?
Yeah. So okay, he came on with Howard
for
The End of Heartache. This is Justin Foley.
Yeah.
And he's been there ever since. And they've had the same lineup aside from the Howard Jesse switchback. They've had the same lineup ever since. So after the first album.
So what I said still made sense.
Yeah.
Cool. Because I thought you were going to say, no, it's a different guy. No. They got him last year.
No. Justin's a very. He seems like a really good bloke too, just watching interviews.
Yeah. Methodical was the word I wanted to go for, not rudimentary.
Yeah.
He's very
– yeah.
Like, this is the kind of drummer that I am.
I think – and he's he's very modest too, I've found. Just looking at – he doesn't speak very highly of himself as a drummer comparatively to other drummers that are out there. No. But I think he's got a good bag of tricks. Like – this it's a Signal Fire. This is just a straight up banger all the way through. I think it's probably, I can't recall a faster tempoed, faster paced Killswitch song.
No, in all honesty. So I just wanted to touch quickly on him as well. Mm-hmm. So like at the start, this is hard to explain, and I don't know if I'll be able to explain it properly, but it makes sense in my head. It's kind of a drummer thing. It starts. It's like he's just slapping the open hats and the snare at the same time.
Yeah.
Right, and it's. If it makes sense, that's like the beat is backwards.
Yeah.
And then after like two bars, he swaps. There's a snare roll.
Yeah.
And he swaps. So then he's going like 16th notes on the hats and then the same speed on the snare. But it's like the beat's going forwards then. Yeah. It's like rolling forward. So it's kind of like a Swedish, what I call a Swedish one too.
I love the Swedish.
Exactly right. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're real. But when they swap it so it goes backwards, like, you know, the start of Guns for Show by Parkway, that's backwards and then like the D beat goes forwards. If that makes sense, it's really hard to explain.
Try and explain it in a song or a genre type of sound where you would have heard it, so people know. Besides this song or that Parkway song, is there any other?
The start of "Say Goodbye" by Prom Queen is a really weird one for me because I can hear that in two different grooves. So it's the same again. So it sounds like he's going forwards with the snare in that, and then he swaps to the double kicking, and it sounds like he's going either backwards or forwards. Like the beat's rolling forwards and forwards and forwards with the hats and the snare.
Yeah.
Or it just sounds like he's using the snare and the hats to kick tempo, like 1, 2, 3, 4, sort of like that.
Yes, it's punk. It's a punk rock inspired. Yeah,
and I have
no
idea if that makes sense to people. But
no, it does.
Probably not. It's weird. Like it took me about 9 years. But now there's like a little switch I can flick in my head at the start of that song.
Yeah.
And I can change the way I hear it.
That's interesting.
You know what I mean?
I hear that sometimes with in guitar as well. When you hear like certain progressions, sometimes especially if you're playing chords, like if you're listening to some chords, sometimes you can hear and you can like focus on certain notes. And so you might be thinking, oh, what am I listening to right now? Are we going higher? Are we going lower here? It sort of messes with your head and you can kind of choose how you listen to it.
I guess it's which note or which beat is the leading beat.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so like with that Prom Queen song, it all comes from the guitar riff.
Yeah.
So in an average song, you know, let's say it's four beats in the bar and your one and your three are your main beats and your two and your four are like called off beats, right? So you're saying that he's doing the things he'd usually do on the main beat on the off beat, and it kind of throws you off a bit, right?
Yeah.
Is that a way to explain it?
It's
hard to explain what I'm getting at.
But basically, I think it's like opposed to sort of doing this whole drumming kind of terminology because I think that's very debatable. Like I'd say 1, 2, 3, 4 are all on beats and then like in between are the off beats. That's how I always thought of it. But to put it simply, I think it changes the feel of the song as you progress, and he does it. Justin does it so seamlessly which is what makes him so good.
And that was, yeah, there's 100% one something I wanted to finish on. Like, I won't bang about the drums too much, but he is too much more. The whole way through, he's seamless.
Yeah.
Everything he's playing is like exactly what the song needs, tempo wise. And I think the rhythm guitarist and the bass player, I don't want to give them a bad rap. They're, you know, they're filling their role, but they're doing exactly what's needed.
We all know who the MVP contenders are going to be for this for this song.
So lyrically, how do we feel about this song?
Well, who wants to start with this? I feel like I've led the way with the lyrics the last few weeks.
I'll give a really quick rundown. It kind of seems like not a generic, but like kind of one of those, like, you know, you're in the face of fucking adversity, but like, you know, fight through, like dig deep for the boys. no, it's, you know, like look at, like look within and just fucking pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know. What is it? Nowhere to hide, strength realign, this signifies better. So it's sort of that call to action.
Yeah.
That call to arms kind of, you know, like it's fucking on, let's go. The signifier's lit. Everyone, like, unite together. Yeah,
that is a good
one. Unite within yourself.
I like, yeah.
And I sometimes don't like a lot of bands have a song like this.
Yeah.
But this one I don't find too preachy. I find it's just like really punchy, good to go.
It's not sweat.
You ripped some ass, did you?
No. I just don't want to get sweat on the microphones.
Now it's your back, Joel, from your little hiatus. What do you think?
What the thing about the song is, obviously Howard's coming. Does Howard feature in the rest of the album?
No. Nah.
He doesn't. That's a shame. Anyway.
I feel like it would ruin it a little bit if he did. Not that he's not good, but they can just go, yeah, we got this mad song with Howard Jones on it.
Yeah, it makes it more special.
He's still alive. He's 50 years old, but he can still sing.
Is he 50?
Almost, yeah. Almost
50. Well, these guys aren't young either.
No. That's right.
What you can probably break it down more personally, but what I think what they said about this song is actually a song for mental health awareness.
Okay, yeah.
So, and it's the same subject matter we seem to harp on about all these mental health issues. Or,
but again, it's a hallmark of heavy music. Heavy music is more frequently, I'm not going to say it is the forerunner or the front runner, but heavy music or rock music and stuff like that is generally the place where you have more emotional output.
You're saying that pop songs about broken hearts and shit aren't very...
Okay, but what value do they have? Okay, Stairway to Heaven, right? Like, how many pop songs can you recite from, like, the 90s that had, oh, my partner left me and broke my heart? But then you think Stairway to Heaven, which came out, what, like 40-plus years ago or thereabouts?
72?
Yeah. Massively emotional song. Classic. Like, you know, the apex, arguably, of, like, emotion in music. Well, that's a very heavily debated. You get what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like, and it's like we talked about with repetition. Yeah, you got the same repetition again. You know, I'm sad. Doesn't mean the music's good.
Or bad.
Well, I think pop music's shit, but that's all subjective.
He's just going to listen to more Katy Perry. So,
watch more reaction videos.
Break it down, Daniel. What's it about? What's going on in this song?
Oh, okay.
Lyrically.
Look, I read an interview, I think it was, you guys heard of Metal Hammer?
Yeah,
metal magazine. Yeah, there was an interview there that I read with Jesse. Obviously, he's the primary lyricist for this album, and you know, I think probably writes all the lyrics, I'd imagine, these days. But he stated that this record was the most difficult he's had to write because it came from such a dark and angry place. And that's basically quoting him word for word there. And
now it's called Atonement. This isn't his first record with them after this.
No, this is his.
He joins for Disarm the Descent.
Disarm the Descent, 2012.
Yes, that's when he came back.
Incarnate in 2016,
okay,
I believe. And then Atonement, 2019. Yeah, I think, August.
The source of my question now is going to be, is the term Atonement or the word Atonement symbolic of anything in their career or in his career, in their lives, in their place in the world as musicians?
Possibly.
Or is it just a dope-sounding title?
I'd say more the former, but I couldn't tell you what exactly. I think it's very personal. I think it's very personal.
Because, you know, Jesse, it's not like they went to rehab 3 weeks before a tour.
It's not like, what are they making up for? What have they got to prove to people?
Again, you know, it's like we talked about with Parkway. They've always just been the pinnacle, and then they might be thinking, fuck, we're not doing well. So
maybe he's trying to prove him to himself.
Yeah, maybe that. I think it's at a more personal kind of level, but... On this song in particular, and Jesse also, I read somewhere, maybe like probably a 2-star at the moment, but I read somewhere that there would be more kind of a political stance in this record as well. So it'd be, a lot of it would be sort of driven from a a mental health standpoint, but it was really politically driven, a lot of the lyrics as well. I don't think this song in particular. I think this song's about, my take on it is about basically being able to break the shackles. Like they talk like through the verses, even the opening line, no more following this endless maze, like no more sort of confining to the constraints of society, which is often I think an underlying cause of a lot of people's.
He uses the word society later on, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he does.
The decay of humanity.
Humanity, there we go. But there's, I think the verses kind of allude towards being sort of stuck or trying to break free of this, of the norm, I guess, you know, trying not to live the norm and live the way you're expected to live. And then the signal fire is about finding that inspiration and then finding that drive.
Call to action.
Yeah, the call to action and to be able to break free from that. Right, and to be able to pave your own path, you know, and choose your own destiny. I think that's what he's kind of getting at. But
yeah, I like I said, that some of these kind of songs, like lyrically, can bug me, but I think it's just kind of shit because I would listen to like if Slipknot had a song like that, or Amity, or Parkway, or fucking whoever. But it's his journey. So he's writing these lyrics. It's his journey. We just as consumers, as listeners, we have access to all of these bands that have songs
absolutely
with a similar theme. That doesn't mean they're right, like they're bad or they're not original for doing it. You know what I mean? It's each person's sort of individual journey. Yeah. We just are like spoiled for choice because we get to see everything.
That's right. So thank you to all those awesome musicians out there that that give us access to.
So you're saying also we get like the tip of the iceberg of what the lyrics might mean.
Yeah,
when into making them, creating them.
Yeah, yeah.
And some vocalists and writers are more open as to what like their lyrics actually mean. You know, some will just tell you straight up what it means. Others will say, these are our lyrics. Take what you want from it, you know.
Well, I'll ask Jesse what they're about next time I talk to him.
Yeah.
On Twitter at The Bangers List.
Now, just on the topic of having Howard and Jesse together, which is friggin' awesome. Like they did a couple of shows recently where Howard made a surprise guest appearance in the crowd just went fucking nuts, as you would.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think a lot of the Killswitch Engage fans, sort of when they reached their peak, came during the Howard era.
Mm-hmm. As we said before, yeah.
Well, the End of Heartache was fucking massive, wasn't it?
Oh, look, End of Heartache followed by As Daylight Dies, which had Mike Hirst, which was there. I think is probably their most renowned song.
That song was on Guitar Hero, so probably got a little bit of leverage from that. It is a good song on its own, but that's, you can get.
I think I was looking at, because, you know, a good way you can gauge what songs are popular these days, looking at the Spotify or Apple Music spins that it's getting and then what's featured in, like, their top five or whatever. And
it's not unfair to say that, like, a long time ago, Guitar Hero used to be, like, a reasonable metric for whatever heavy. I'm not saying you're not saying that, but, yeah, like, that was what we used before Spotify was a thing, before the age of streaming. Like, it was, if a heavy, like, Before I Forget was on.
That's right.
You were just like, oh, my God.
It was a kind of a gateway for a lot of, I guess, maybe not necessarily metal listeners to branch into that genre. So, yeah, Guitar Hero was great.
You listen to a song so much that you remember it, and then you get that thing, the familiarity of the song, and it grows on you, and you realize, oh, I like this for some fucking reason. It's like Pat Benatar or something.
Was that an Abbey call? Hit me with your shirt. Oh, I love this. So I was just on the topic of Adam D. I was looking, I think one of the things that may have helped a little bit with Killswitch's popularity is his work as a producer.
Yes, yeah, they did want to talk about that too.
So I'm not going to read all of them out, but I'm just having a quick look at his production credits as a producer. So you've got All That Remains, The Acacia Strain, As I Lay Dying, August Burns Red. He did Thrill Seeker, which was like pretty much their first album, I believe. He did a From Autumn to Ashes record. I didn't know that. Norma Jean, Parkway, Under Oath, you know, The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
Those are the highlights of his production credits, but you know, if you look at what records he did for those bands, I know that From Autumn to Ashes, Too Bad to Be Beautiful was their debut. He did Parkway's first two records. He did two of Under Oath's arguably best records. So, and that was in that real pocket of like 2002 to 2008, sort of. There was that really intense pocket of where like heavy music in this format was just starting to fucking head off into the stratosphere at a rapid rate of knots. And that was all sort of post Alive or Just Breathing.
Yeah.
A friend of mine at work, actually, we were talking the other day, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's not that good of a record. He's like, I'm going to come over there and stab you, eh? I'm like, he was adamant, and look, I agree with him. He said, without that record, there wouldn't be a lot of the metalcore that you listen to today.
Okay. You can say that, I guess.
That end, I don't fully disagree. But I think just by virtue of a lot of bands I've seen, credit Killswitch.
Yeah.
With that's influences. Right. They're not like, oh my God, Adam D was the reason I picked up a guitar. But, you know, I think they've definitely had a big influence. Because if you listen to that record, it's like metalcore in 2002 of a good quality style. Like, you know, breakdowns, good riffing.
Produced very well.
Yes.
The sound is very clean.
Not being an expert on the record, you know, I'm not going to say it's the best thing ever, but I can understand why people would say this helped kickstart metalcore.
Yeah. In a time when, I guess, like we've talked about before, it wasn't, social media wasn't as crazy as it is now. Those years it was like,
it was fledgling. Media in 2002?
Oh, yeah, it would have been MySpace and stuff, definitely.
Yeah.
And so wasn't, you know, where we'd go to share music and stuff so much in such a big way. You couldn't connect with the whole.
At that point,
yeah, you couldn't connect with the whole world. You just jump onto your Bebo account or whatever it's called. look, you know they've got Jesse back now, which is great and all. He had to audition to get back into the band, right? Yes. And I think he didn't think he was going to get in or whatever, and he went to the auditions because he didn't want Killswitch Engage to have another singer. So he's like, I'll just go and see what happens. Sure enough, gets back into the band. Best thing that could have happened for him. He's back. It sounds good, but isn't that weird, like auditioning for your old spot just because you don't want the band
It's defensive eating in auditioning. Do you know what defensive eating is? So like if you have Christmas dinner or lunch, right? And then you know that period of family Christmas lunch where it's like 2:30, 3 o'clock and everyone's just like in a food coma and trying to just digest before dinner. There's like one slice of apple pie left in the fridge, right? And if you eat anything else, you'll throw up really violently. But you eat that apple pie because you don't want anyone else to fucking have it. That's defensive eating. You're not hungry. You don't like, it's not going to be fun. You're not going to enjoy it. But you can't stand the sight of someone else eating that slice of apple pie.
Yeah, bad office etiquette. I like it.
Yeah, so.
And going back to the band and shit.
Yeah, I was just going to say quickly, I think it's probably a pragmatic thing of them as well. Because, I mean, like, they don't know where his vocals were at. So, they're not just going to say, oh, yeah, join the band again, and then he can't sing properly.
Yeah, but I think it would have come along.
Because they might have said, we need to know that you can do cleans.
Yeah, and I think he can now. He can nail his cleans.
I saw some clips of the audition. And I think he was singing Rose of Sharon, and he killed it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not quite Howard, but he can pull it off. You know, I think that was kind of the... what's up, mate?
No. No, 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 no. One of our mates... He lives out in the country. Long story short, there was an ad in the local paper, like in the music section or whatever, for a Tool cover band. And it said lead singing position must sound like Maynard.
No pressure.
I mean, Corey told me about that. And we've always just laughed. You just reminded me of that, man. You've always, because like, can you imagine going to a fucking, like a shitty, like, cover band and they're like, you don't sound like Maynard, you're not in.
Or like it's a Queen cover band, like we need you to sound exactly like Freddie.
Oh yeah, no pressure whatsoever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so like must sound like Maynard's kind of just a running meme now.
Gotcha. Yeah. With you now. Jesse auditioned, I think Rose of Sharon was one of the songs he performed and he did it super well. And I think that would have been something that they looked at a fair bit. They need to know that Jesse could hit the notes that Howard could hit and provide that same kind of stigma that Howard could provide. Yeah. And it's not going to sound exactly the same because,
stigma? All right.
Righto, what?
I don't know if that's the word, but keep going.
Well, look, fucking ask the guy who's vocabulary over here, okay?
He can produce the same kind of feel.
Yeah.
Or presence.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Okay. See, Joel now has a stigma as being an asshole.
Sorry. Anyway.
That's how you would use that word.
Yeah. There we go. Thank you. I appreciate this lesson in words. I can't even fucking say words. What I was going to say was Jesse, look, obviously he passed the test. He was able to provide the same kind of presence that Howard could provide. And that was going to be something that they'd look into quite a lot. But I think from Jesse's point of view, it's not just, you know, he didn't want Killswitch to have another singer. It wasn't just a defensive motive. I think it was also, from what I've read, it was a second coming for Jesse. It was a second chance at this because he really struggled with mental health and addiction in his early days.
Yeah, he did too.
And which is why he left. And I think it was more rather than him being kicked out, I think it was a mutual kind of agreement between the members that that Jesse wasn't in the right place to be doing this, to be riding this wave of success. He wouldn't be able to handle it. Yeah. And it was a
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe just I haven't seen the right things. But I think that's not super common for bands as well. You know, a lot of people, especially the front man, like we've talked about before, the whole lead singer's disease thing, like when you're the face and the voice, it can be hard to let that go no matter what you're going through. So it's, I guess it is good to hear that it was a mutual thing and he honestly went, I can't keep doing this. Like, this is not good for me. It's not good for you guys. You know, rather than them getting to the point where they just had to kick him out.
Say,
I think he's atoned for his actions.
Atoned. You going to dab again?
No, but you know, obviously they probably would have still had Howard had Howard not left, but he had to leave because he had type 2 diabetes and stuff and, you know, went to a coma after leaving the band. Was all, had some struggles there. I think he's good now, but he must be because he started a new band which was called The Devil You Know, right?
Yep.
I don't know if you recall this. We maybe not you, but I definitely went and saw them at a festival.
Yeah, I was there.
You would have been there. And so there was a giant stage and they were playing on the tiny little stage next to it, right? So I went over there and I'm like, oh, this is going to get packed. You know, Howard Jones band's going to be here. There's going to be heaps of people. And I shit, you know, it was just like six people. And then like Howard Jones and his new band just like playing music and he was as good as he's ever been, but playing on a tiny stage to nobody. It was surreal. Like, I was like just standing there like 20 minutes away with no one between me and him, just like, you know, shell-shocked. Like, this is like one of them. You know, this guy and singing is part of the reason I love metalcore today. And there he just was it was weird, you know, how mighty have fallen kind of thing. And anyway, that band had to get renamed to something else because of legal issues and now they're called Light the Torch or something. So all the best to Howard, whatever he's doing. But let's try and get back to the song at hand.
Yeah, which we've not talked about.
No, yeah.
We always say this.
The Signal Fire. What I was saying before was when we're talking about the fact that we got Howard and Jesse together is such a rarity, and you know Howard performed live with them a couple of times recently. So when I heard that, I think I saw a photo actually of Howard in the studio with Jesse. I was like, oh fuck yeah, this is going to be sick, and it didn't disappoint. Like this song coming out did not disappoint at all. I was sort of like, oh maybe it'll be a bit of a letdown because you sort of think Howard and Jesse together like. It's hyped up so much, like you.
Will it stand?
Will it live up to the expectation? And I think it did, it does. Some. So
people should check it out.
But you guys, it's funny that you guys mentioned earlier. I think it was you, Joel. You said that you can't really tell the difference between the two of them. And do you agree, Julian? Like this vocally?
I couldn't tell who was who.
Okay.
Like, the only real recollection of Howard Jones I have is the end of Heartache.
Yeah,
but
okay.
It's so powerful cleanse there. But I mean, again, I've
it's interesting. Hey, it's interesting.
But like, you don't get to any point in this song and think this vocalist is not good.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Like,
the vocals are quality the whole way through.
Yeah,
so I don't know. So why? I couldn't remember the riff that sounded like This Calling by As Blood Runs Black, I think.
All That Remains.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, like, just that like real fast double bass and that. Like,
on double the bass?
Yeah, because at the start of it, he goes fucking hell
for it. Oh, under.
You're thinking, thinking of...
No. Yeah.
Joel's thinking the
those
big
two cello guys playing like...
Okay, there's your fuck up.
Right? Yeah. No, so I know that I've got the riff in my head now, but like the first couple of times I was like, oh, I got to remember. And I was like, all I could think was This Calling.
Yeah.
Because that's a fucking mad way to start a song.
Oh, yeah.
So
similar kind of start, yeah.
But yeah, that's what we're talking about. I think there's no point where you're disappointed. I mean, some people might go, oh, of course you can tell who they are.
Well, I think it's
showing how inept I am at listening to music.
I think, like, to be honest, at first listen, I had to really concentrate to find out who was where. But
obviously, I can tell now.
You can tell now, and he's sort of like, oh, here comes Howard's bit, here's Jesse's bit.
It's kind of a testament to Jesse, though, because like, a lot of people call him as the underdog. Mm. And so to like, oh my God, he stood up to Howard Jones. Like Howard, you know, his vocals could have deteriorated, but assuming they haven't, Jesse's like, well, I'm not alive or just breathing Jesse anymore.
Yeah.
I am like modern era. I can do Howard's parts. Yeah. Like check me out, get around me, kind of Jesse Leach. And I think that would be fucking hard.
They both sing at the same time in some of the song as well.
Right? Yeah, they do. It's great. Yeah, I love that.
There's a set where one of them's doing cleans and the other one's got a scream tracked over it, maybe?
Yep.
I'm not sure. In this maybe song. The chorus, yeah.
Yeah, there's a, yeah, there's a bit of that. You can hear screams in the background, but...
And they'd sort of do like a, this duet. What I noticed was there's a bit of back and forth with the screaming, with the uncleans. Almost said the word.
Yeah, it's call and response.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's pretty fucking awesome. Like, and it's how often do you have songs where you have two unclean vocalists doing that? That's a, what did you just
call and response?
Call and response. Yeah, doing that call and response, yeah. Having that call and response approach. And I think that is when you can tell the difference between the two vocalists.
Okay.
I think they've got different screams. I think that's what's most unique about them. They've got different screams. And I think that's cool. Just something I want to touch on quickly is that a lot of bands do actually sound like a, when we're talking this metalcore kind of genre, modern metal genre, bands do, the unclean vocalists do sound quite unique. A lot of people kind of rat on modern metal music for all sounding the same as like this screaming garbage, and it's just not true. And I think
when my friends say I don't like being screamed at, I'm like, they're not screaming at you, you fucking moron.
Okay, so what you're saying, they're ignorant, but picture this. I go to a wine tasting thing and I try like 16 red wines and I think, fuck, these all taste the same. And some like, fancy cunts like, oh, and this one tastes like this and this one can taste some trees. I look ignorant there. So it's just the same kind of thing,
Well, you are technically.
Yeah, well, you've got to go down the
like, rabbit. No, path. If you want to, like you would actually, because there is like a massive, like a measurable difference there. So it is admittedly a small, not elitism, but a small niche amount of frustration at someone else's inability to like comprehend your knowledge.
Yeah.
And it's also them not knowing what the fuck they're talking about.
And in saying that small thing, I guess with the wine again, there's some scream styles you might not enjoy. And some that sound very similar to what you do enjoy, but you don't like for whatever reason. Yeah. And it's a personal preference again, and it's just bizarre.
Right. Now, songs off this record that you think are worth a listen. We'll do that.
Or do you want to say Killswitch songs? Or just off this record?
Those
would be Killswitch songs as well.
I mean, like the whole catalogue. Anyway.
Tough one. It's a solid record all the way through. There's not really one song that I was let down by any means. First one that comes to mind is I Am Broken 2. It's a pretty simply structured song. Once again, pretty brief, but just has more of the Howard Jones era feel to it, which is what I like about it. So,
fat riffs.
It's just a fat sound, not necessarily fat riffs, but a big powerful sound, but it's more melodic. A slower song. It's a good change up. Good change of pace for the album.
So we can skip over good songs by them because but I guess people can go back and look at their most famous songs like End of Heartache, Rose of Sharon, My Curse, blah, blah. But then I was going to say bands like these guys, right? But I want you to try and think of bands that are similar to them but newer than them. That's easy enough, but sound inspired by Killswitch maybe.
I'll start. One we've spoken of somewhat recently, pod was about 5 or 6 weeks ago, Bury Tomorrow. I'd say they've got
sound. He's not a falsetto clean singer.
Mm-hmm.
He's powerful cleans when he's in the mid-range. Yep. And we can also say, I know you guys probably don't like this band anymore because of, personal bullshit, but Five Finger Death Punch have a very similar sound to some of their shit.
I still love them, man. Come on.
Five Finger Death Punch is a Nickelback of metal.
Yeah, let's not rag on them too much because obviously they're inspired by Killswitch Engage.
That's a little bit unfair to say. Shouldn't say anyone's like Nickelback.
I think the people say that because they're actually successful. I think that's the problem.
Massive hate. Yeah, like massive.
Did you know
hate.
That I read this yesterday? Megadeth are supporting Five Finger Death Punch on a tour next year in the US.
Well, that doesn't say much about Five Finger Death Punch.
No, but Megadeth.
More so that it says a lot about Megadeth because they're shit.
But they've been around for so long and they've iconic. Had some great songs and they've got one of the best guitarists in the world in the band.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it's interesting kind of how things times change and how this modernized metal band is.
I'm not sticking up for Metallica when I say that, by the way. Metallica fanboys are like, put it to them. I'm like, no, they cancelled their show. I'm really mad at them.
So can we think of any other smaller bands that actually are worth to listen to that sounds similar to Killswitch Engage that people may enjoy? Or are we just a fucking useless podcast with no information worth sharing?
No OG content whatsoever. let's have a quick fuck. No, I don't want to make a playlist. I'm just going to like music.
You can't just go into music. All that remains.
All that remains for sure. All That Remains, I wouldn't say, are at the level that Trivium or Killswitch have reached. I'd say they're on the – they're not a small band by any means, but internationally, outside the US, they don't have a lot of success. And
yep. Similar enough sound.
Yeah, I think there's – they come from the same kind of era. Yeah. Phil Labonte from after – I think after – was it after Jesse left? Yeah, after Jesse left the first time, I think he auditioned for – for really? Killswitch before Howard did, yeah.
Interesting. So it could have been a different...
Could have been completely different.
I don't know if they're bands that sound strictly like them, but bands that I think have a very tight style, good riffing, just all across the board good in the way that Killswitch mm-hmm. are, I would say Still Remains and Texas in July.
Okay.
Now, Texas in July, you could argue, is an August Burns Red clone. They're also friends. But they're not together anymore. Not a clone, but they've got that very technical metalcore kind of style. But yeah. again, really solid across the right. board.
Very similar elements throughout bands, which you might enjoy.
Yeah.
Look, let's jump into the more meaty subjects here. The MVPs quickly, boys. Look, I know this is a hard one. I'm going to go first because I'm going to just take all your answers straight away. The vocalists, I've circumvented the rules and there's two MVPs here. Just the vocalists together. This song could have been delivered shit, really. Could have had a worse... couple of things or something, the way they've done it really does, it just brings the song all, it brings it all together. It's not a unique sound, but for what it is kind of unique, you know, having two vocalists. It's very, it's an interesting idea. It's really cool. Mm. I think they're the MVPs.
What they do, they do well.
Yeah, they nail it.
Yeah.
So
I'll just agree with you. Yeah, okay. I think the drums is good as well, but I think Jesse Leach and Howard Jones, I mean, you kind of just got to say that's a wow factor in its own right. Like no one would ever think that would happen. So good on them for getting together and, you know, breaking down any barriers they may have had together or between one another. Like, you know, it might have been between them, between the band and Howard or whatever. I don't know. You hear shit on the internet.
Yeah,
like, whatever.
Of course, but
they did something sick. Let's all enjoy it and shut the fuck up about the reasons.
Man, yeah.
Do you have another idea for the MVP or are you on board with us?
No, I've got a different idea. I'm sorry.
This guy.
No, Adam D's my man for this one.
Sweet.
Adam D has been the MVP, not just for this song, but for Killswitch for a number of years. He, for me, he is Killswitch, you know. There wouldn't be a Killswitch without Adam D.
Fair point.
And I think it's no different in this song. You think about it, like, yeah, the vocals, I think it's a great kind of, it's a great concept having Howard and Jesse together. Stop touching him, Julian. Stop it. don't touch me. but I think it's a great idea, great concept having those two together. Worked super well. And yeah, I'm glad they did it. But I think you could have taken just Howard or you could have taken just Jesse and the song would be just as good, you know?
Fair
and
enough.
I think Adam D is the driving force behind this song. It's his to be able to go from the thrash to a groovy riff so seamlessly into it, that's just what he does so well. And then he, you know, cracks open a fat solo.
yeah, so right. You know, can you go to the fridge and grab me a
fat solo?
Fat solo? Crack it open a fat solo with the voice.
Bring it back and give me an eye bleed as well. I kind of
agree with you. Just to use like mainstream sort of examples, he goes from like a Kerry King thrash to like a Devil Driver kind of groove feel.
Yeah.
And then maybe like even like a sort of a Trivium style sort of solo. And I like that the solo wasn't just brutally fast finger picking. There was there's tapping in there towards the end, I'm assuming. Or is it just whatever it is, it's
I'm not sure about tapping, but yeah, there's
But anyway, he's not just like, oh my god, I'm gonna flex. It's the solo, much like the rest of the musicians, is tailored to the song.
Yeah.
And it doesn't try to stand out.
Yeah.
So I think
in that
respect, he's very talented.
Mm-hmm.
So
bangs, boys, right. bangs.
Fuck, we're nearly in an hour, aren't we?
How many bangs?
You're going first because you love Killswitch the most.
I'm going to go 8 out of 10 bangs for this one. It's solid Killswitch one. One of the better ones they've done in the modern Jesse era, I'd say.
I reckon after 10 listens, it would get boring.
Well, so I don't know, Julian.
15 times today. Yeah. I think after 10 listens a day for 10 days. That'd be pushing it.
Yeah.
Not being a Killswitch fan, I'm not going to dick ride, so I'm going to say 8 because it fucking slaps. It's like Amity's song last week.
Yeah.
It fucking slaps.
Yeah.
You jump into it. It's like 3 minutes long. You jump in. You have some fun. It spits you out. You're keen for more.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also like lead into other music for that.
Yeah.
Because they're a good they're very much their own style, but they do blend well with other good metalcore bands.
Yeah.
So, 8.
You know, you've convinced me. I'm going to say 7.5.
You're just drinking Haterade, aren't you?
It's good.
It's good stuff. I think it's fair to say that All Out, they're a good band and they're good at what they do, and they're well respected for that reason. Oh. So,
and we had to do a pod on Killswitch or Adam D. Eventually,
in the future, we will not be referencing Killswitch Engage. We will not be referencing Adam D. We won't be talking about them and circle jerking over them. Bands that we love. Oh wait, I've said that. There'll be probably a band in a couple of weeks.
Do you know what's next?
What's next? That's everybody.
Well, you're going to have to talk for a couple of seconds while I bring the podcast up.
Wrap this one up. Make sure you guys talk to us on Twitter at The Bangers List. Check out the playlist as it grows. Yeah, well, that's it for Julian, who's keeping up to date.
Hey, yes, it's on there. Well, I haven't put this one on there yet, but where the fuck is the playlist?
So oh, there it is. On,
what are we doing next week? Well, it was a bit, we weren't sure what we were going to do. I believe it's The Devil Wears Prada.
Okay.
So.
Well, look, I don't know a lot about them. So it's good. Yeah. This is back into that unfamiliar territory for a lot of us. Yeah. And I think.
But we there's a couple of options we've got there. Maybe we'll discuss that offline. Anyway.
Watch this space, eh?
Watch this space. Get at us on Twitter. Fucking say some stuff to us. Joel moderates the Twitter. He's pretty stoked that. Did Mike Chamber ever get back to us? No. Not yet? That's all right. We'll wait. Mike, we got your back. It's cool.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very aggressive skivvy.
It is, mate.
I like it.
Is it intimidating?
A little, yeah. If I wasn't wearing a flanny, I'd be intimidated.